Yeah.
Wait.
Okay.
Let's do it. Yay! Merry Jesmas and Happy New Year, everybody.
Jezbula, where you at?
I actually own stemware, so I'm pouring this into these sake glasses that I used to steal from the bar.
These are pretty.
They have little pandas on them.
Amber doesn't own stemware. She owns liberal arts wear. liberal arts wear.
I want the Snoopy mug, please. I'm putting a marker down on that right now.
That one's mine.
Oh, okay. All right, so in case you don't understand sound effects, that was an actual bottle of champagne.
That's $13 champagne, folks.
Being popped on air.
Popping bottles, y'all.
We're popping bottles to celebrate the absolute top boy, Jezza. It's the Jezza episode. It's the Jezza victory lap episode, guys. I don't even know where to begin with this one. Because there's so much to talk about.
We're extremely happy.
Yeah.
The world is legible.
I'm chuffed.
Chuffed is one of those English words that means not what it sounds like, right? It's good, right?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Chuffed is good.
It's good.
Yeah.
We're all well chuffed.
It's chuffing season.
My fanny is well chuffed at the moment.
Yeah, no, let me put this into perspective. The moment the exit poll hit, I was stuck in the Brooklyn Queens tunnel on my way to the airport. Two of the worst things, but I was just like almost crying with joy. Going through TSA, it looked like the exit polls were fucked up. Then I get on the plane. My sinus infection is making my fucking ears clog up and my eye feel like it's about to burst out of my head, but I didn't even care because Jez did it. And I went into the bathroom and dipped and watched. I watched.
Looking like Arnold at the end of Total Recall.
Yeah, yeah. I got my ass to Mars. Mars on Stratonshire.
Can we just chink glasses together and get that sound effect as well? Let's do it up.
Yeah, let's do it. Cheers.
Cheers, cheers to the absolute boy.
The boy.
I mean, I want to begin actually, like, Matt, the last time you were in the city, we were talking about this, like, before the election, and we alluded to it a little bit on our UK pre-election show that we did with Jonathan Shannon. But I remember talking to you about it, that if this had gone another way, it would have been really fucking hard. Like, it would have been really hard to, like, keep going, you know, or to make the case that we have been making with regards to electoral politics in Western democracies.
Yeah, I mean, this was like what got me so fucking hip and excited about this is that it's a proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what we've been saying since Trump is, well, if you give people, you know, a vision of a world where their lives are fucking better than they are now, and you identify the actual malefactors that make their lives shitty in the present moment instead of going off on scapegoats, you can actually engage people regardless of their circumstances or whatever their tribal affiliations are, and motivate them, and specifically motivate people who wouldn't otherwise vote.
Yeah.
And tap into that, which is like the most fertile ground in terms of future electoral prospects. And this was really the chance to see that theory brought out. And it fucking worked. It fucking worked. Even though the entirety of the British press, they all said that he was a nightmare IRA sympathizing dipshit. And it didn't fucking matter.
It didn't work at all.
They still were able to fucking bring out people to vote who otherwise wouldn't have, and bring out young people. 72%!
No, because the media class is so cynical, they literally underestimate people all the time, every time. They say, you're not ready for this radical blah, blah, blah. But they are! It's fine!
They tried everything. They tried to reinforce every third rail Corbyn was touching, whether it was his anti-imperialism, whether it was just unabashedly saying, yes, we need to redistribute. They tried it. All these things that 10 years ago we believed would end anyone's campaign. But no, he fucking did it. He persisted.
They had the one thing that scared liberals across the Western world are most afraid of before an election, which is a terror attack. Because the playbook is always, if there's a terror attack, it redounds to the right wing. It redounds to the security state, always. But instead of curling into a ball and trying to be defensive or deflect, Corbyn took the principled anti-imperialist critique that he'd been developing for his entire career in politics and fucking used it, and people were receptive because it made sense. Like, the guy who blew up the Manchester Ariana Grande concert came from a family who were part of a Islamist militant group that had been fucking armed by the British government during the Libya invasion. And who had said that was a bad idea to begin with? The motherfucking boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I say something about his foreign policy speech that he made, his speech about terrorism? I have been waiting since fucking 2001 for someone on the center left or left or anywhere even. I would have taken it from anywhere to make that speech, but they never did. The best we got in America was Sanders' position. You know, I'm for the smart wars. I'm for the good war. You know, not the bad ones like Iraq. But Corbyn, who has an actual holistic view about imperialism, about terrorism, and about blowback, he goes out and makes a speech. And after years of being told that people will rip you apart because they've been reading Gene Kilpatrick, and it's for some reason it's still 1984 or September 12, 2001, he just didn't care. He's going to do it right or wrong. But this time, most of the people agreed with him.
And the other thing that I really love, that the other major third rail that he touched in one of those debates, is that he wouldn't commit himself to preemptively nuking another country if they insulted the Queen Mum or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just like, no, he was like, no, actually, that's fucking insane.
The swing that Labour got was the highest for any party since 1945.
Yep.
Most of the Labour MPs who lost their seats were anti-Corbyn guys, the Blairites. Uh-huh. So, owned. I mean, the death of Blairism is accelerating at an awesome rate. And on the media point, there's a great anecdote that came out while things were kicking off about Rupert Murdoch at the party that was supposed to be celebrating May's victory, and he started to see...
Also hosted at the Javits Center, coincidentally enough.
And everyone was throwing up and vomiting. And he, you know, got a look at the exit polls and stormed out, apparently. And despite all the hysteria about fake news and the internet and stuff like that, the fact is that a very small percentage of young people in their country or our country read the print media that, of course, in Britain is overwhelmingly just, you know, dominated and infected by right-wing billionaires like him. And so while it's great to see that Corbyn didn't back down or he didn't get, you know, sledgehammered by any of it, a large reason why that is because the young people who voted for him didn't care or didn't read it and are not going to start reading it.
Yeah, and I'd just like to speak to Amber's point about how the media class, like, breeds this kind of cynicism that they themselves are so stewed in. It is infectious, and like I will certainly cop to feeling that same kind of cynicism or trying to never really let myself believe, like preparing myself psychologically for what I thought the bad outcome would be, which is that he would be defeated convincingly and then be shuffled off the, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. I was like, I was just wincing internally the entire time. Like all of that, the absolute boy gonna do it shit that I would do online, it felt like preemptive irony. Like, I was doing the irony now because I knew that I wouldn't have the energy or the will to do it later because I'd be too fucking depressed. I look back at how I felt about it, about this election, and I realize that it's a mirror image to how I felt about Trump, in that in my gut, I kind of thought Corbyn was going to do it, but I convinced myself he wasn't, in the same way that I kind of in my gut knew Trump was going to do it,
yeah,
and convinced myself that I wasn't, because in both cases – I could not conceive of a world that good or that bad.
Yeah. Well, and you also can't conceive of everyone whose job it is to know about this stuff being wrong. And everyone.
And yet we so much should have. And yet it's so pervasive. It's such just a mechanism, such a overwhelming mechanism that even though these dipshits are wrong all the time about everything.
All the time.
The fact that they still have jobs and they're still there in print every fucking day. It conditions you to take them seriously. And now they're eating shit, and one of them literally ate his own book on the fucking BBC.
Yeah, that guy rules, though.
Jim Messina, that fucking amphibian who worked for Obama and then was tweeted smugly about how Hillary was going to roll over Trump in 2016 and then went to work for Theresa May and her fascist gargoyles, has not tweeted since the day of the election.
If the U.S. government really wants to take out Assad, they're going to send Jim Messina to work for his campaign.
Yeah, he would lose a bath party election. That's how fucking rotten that asshole is.
But I, when leading up to this, you know, months ago, I was saying, like, you know, I thought he could do it. I was like, I'm laying it on my boy Jez. He can find what I said. But what I meant was I thought he was going to cut the majority. He was going to cut Theresa May's lead and the Conservative Party's lead, and he was going to surprise people. He was going to do like maybe 6 points better than a poll suggested. But he did beyond that. Hung parliament. He got a hung fucking parliament.
And right now, the polling agencies that got it pretty close to the mark are saying that if there were a general election
six points ahead,
I mean, he would win it. I mean, he could actually win. And there will be shortly.
This coalition that she was able to cobble together is doomed. And of course, that's the ultimate irony of all this, is that she spent the entire campaign saying that Corbyn was in bed with terrorists.
Yep.
And now she's literally formed a government with the political arm of the Ulster Defense Association,
which is a
bunch of fucking murderers who literally murdered a guy in a Sainsbury parking lot last week.
Yes.
And then the leader of the UDA met with the head of the DU, the DUP, later on after that. I mean, it's like a parody. I mean, my dream of Sinn Féin coming in and giving Jez a majority didn't happen, but we're sort of getting a weird, like, mirror version of that with this like shambolic connection between the DUP and the Tories, which, by the way, has not been finished yet. The latest thing I heard is that the Orange Order is asking that they, as a condition of joining the government, the DUP demand that they bring back the marching season and all of the band marches that lead to massive riots every year that they used to do them. I mean, it's really amazing because this is the return of the repressed with the DUP, because the Tories got back in power in 2010, partly by basically jettisoning their classical social conservatism and saying, we're the new conservative party with a heart. We don't care if you're gay or anything like that. We just want, you know, to privatize the NHS. And we're basically the Democrats now. And now, like, all of that repressed social reactionaryism is now coming back in them having to stitch together this coalition with the DUP, which is like the most horrifyingly savage atavistic core of like white settler colonial ideology. It's like the thing that animates all of the most base and horrible reaction throughout the Western world without any kind of alloy or finish on it. I mean, it really is. It's like if it's like if Eric Rudolph's unindicted co-conspirators had formed a political party.
Yeah.
And I only say Eric Rudolph because Timothy McVeigh was Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah. Theresa May forming a coalition government with the supporting characters from the movie A Field in England.
Well, the thing is, Matt, Theresa May jumped the gun on this one. The person who ran saying she was the one to negotiate the Brexit said, it's okay, we're going to start make a government with the DUP. And the DUP said, hang on, we didn't agree to that yet.
The DUP will only join a government with the Conservatives on the condition that they maintain the ban on the hunting of foxes and repeal the ban on the hunting of Catholics.
Matt, explain to the children who the DUP are.
They were created by Ian Paisley, the maniac Presbyterian minister who once tried to fist fight the Pope at the European Parliament. John Paul
Wait,
II.
I like this guy.
Same.
He was actually knocked out by MEP member Otto von Habsburg when he tried to do it. And they are the most reactionary, the most far-right parts of the Ulster Unionist movement. And they are deeply connected to the UDF or the UDA, which is the main umbrella sort of legacy terrorist group. They're very similar to Sinn Féin, only Sinn Féin is good. And they really do think of themselves as like part of a settler colonial legion of doom. Like, I've seen pictures of the inside of UDA meeting houses where they've got flags on the wall, and they'll have the Red Hand of Ulster and the Union Jack, of course, but also the Confederate flag, maybe the Israeli flag, and the flags of apartheid South Africa and Rhodesia.
Yeah, one point I want to make on that is actually Angela told a funny story that I think is indicative for like Americans to try to understand like what the difference is between Irish Republicans and the Ulster people in Northern Ireland. She said she had American leftist friends who went to Ireland for the first time and had a kind of skeptical attitude about Irish Republicanism. And they were like, well, this is just really nationalism of another. Yeah, this is just nationalism of another stripe. And then they went to Northern Ireland and walking through the Irish Republican neighborhoods, they have these murals that feature Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, and like children holding hands with like "We will win," like victory for like the workers of the world and stuff. Then you literally cross the street and in the Ulster
Shankill Road, baby.
You see murals dedicated to Robert E. Lee and like a Grim Reaper stabbing a Union Jack into a dead body with like "We will kill you."
It's the Share Zone.
Exactly.
One of the most famous murals on the Shankill Road. I actually saw it. It's a guy in a ski mask pointing a AK at you. And the thing they say is that it's like the Mona Lisa in that as you move, the barrel of the gun follows you around.
But the one point I want to make about...
This is Adolf Hitler meeting Vegeta. It stands for the Unified Unionist Rule.
The one point I want to make about the DUP, though, is what's so grimly hilarious about this, Matt, is that, as you alluded to, the Tories were running as the rebranded, we're the nice conservatives now, we're not anti-gay. But the fact that they actually are basically going to restart the Troubles to form this shambolic government makes so hilarious the fact that a fucking traitor like Jim Messina could go work for these assholes, and another absolute fraud, J.K. Rowling, and all of her ridiculous, like, basically encouraging people on Election Day to vote for the Lib Dems, 100% trying to throw the election to the Tories against what was a good, proper, and right candidate in Jeremy Corbyn.
What's so exciting about this moment, because before the election, the residual Blairites in the Labour Party were not trying to win. They were just trying to sweat Jeremy Corbyn so that one day he would be gone and there would be another Miliband would show up and make another obelisk that says we're going to kick out the Packies.
I just want to read now here the last couple tweets from Jim Messina, who is now extremely not online since the exit polls came in. What he did here is he's quote tweeting a picture of a Labour Party plane circling over a polling place and like dragging a banner in the sky. And Jim Messina like quotes this and says, "Tale of two campaigns: Tories going targeted digital, other side flying banners." Guess what, bitch?
The ground game's in our hearts, bitch. It's not on computers.
Ooh, where's your data now, bitch? And then, Jesse is Neo. He saw all your zeros and ones and kicked Theresa May's head off. Fuck you.
and then here's the really...
Fuck NATO.
Here's the really good one. The very last tweet he did from 4 days ago, he just says, "From London, watching this strong Democratic election as my country's politics slides off the rail. Hashtag general election 2017. Hashtag Comey." Because he was doing... people forget this. This is the other fucking great thing about this election. It happened on the same day as that fucking bullshit Comey testimony that I had to endure hearing about just in cars and booming out of people's speakers all day long because they were so riveted by that absolute...
All the stories...
That was horrible.
Yeah.
All the stories of young people in Brooklyn assembling at bars to watch this in random warehouses all over Brooklyn.
Oh my God, that was the most depressing shit on earth, was seeing people tweeting about their fucking Comey watch parties. It's like,
oh my God,
Jonestown Flavor Aid, for God's sakes.
The absolute boy versus the absolute bore.
I mean, like, so on one hand, you have the perfect representation of American liberalism. You have some 6'8 fucking lummox who spent the last 40 years framing retarded Muslims for attempting to kill Inspector Gadget. and you're like, oh, this is democracy. He's going to take down the right wing. Overseas, you have an actual campaign. You have an actual manifesto. I think the crucial part that we're forgetting about this is Labour's manifesto.
That was when the gap started closing, is after they released the manifesto.
It's not just... Okay, so, you know, there's the thing that we talked about on the Fisher episode where he said that, you know, the left is kind of stagnant and all it can do is try and fight for what it has, and it's of course losing grounds. The manifesto is fucking advancing the demands. Mm. You know what they want? Listen to this, Grey Wolves. He wants to renationalize the trains.
Yes. Oh, by the way, search from Jeremy Corbyn on Twitter and trains. If fucking accidentally slapping a tit wasn't enough. he is so one of us. But it's, I mean, okay, I remember like during the election, people were like, well, if you go to Hillary Clinton's website and you click on, you know, on the issues, there's a great explanation of policy. And it's like, yeah, but did you make a big splash about putting that policy out there? About did you do a big press conference and a big media drop about how, I don't know, Hillary's plan to like to fucking make Uber for drone construction or something? Like, no, you ran on like, I'm voting for this baby. She's my abuela. But Corbyn ran
next
on,
model, by the way.
Corbyn ran on, we're going to give you your future back.
Yep.
And that was more powerful than any fucking Katy Perry now with the same haircut from the Stan
Because
music
there was
video
a swing. Or, no one really was that crazy. I mean, some people were, but a lot of people weren't that crazy about him. And he wasn't exactly a juggernaut of charisma. But then you give people a manifesto that says, here's what we're going to do for you. And suddenly they're like, oh, I can vote for that guy.
Yeah. Jez had a message that would make you want to fight for it. He said before the election, you are lions. We are the many. They yes. are the few. And it's like, where do I sign up to join this
yeah.
militia?
Oh, yeah, we were talking about like during the RNC when Trump made like one of the only coherent speeches he made that year where he goes, I am your voice. And we went,
yeah.
How come we don't have a guy from the left who could say stuff
God,
like that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Jez. My God. And my exact thought was, I wish he was on our fucking
yeah.
side.
Yeah. And then, but now we do have that. And it's like he was doing that while the other side was like, if you have a cut, we're going to tax it so we can use its stem cells to bring back Jimmy Savile.
A few months before the election, Jez recorded a video of himself sitting down on the train and complaining that there weren't yes. enough seats on the train.
Yes.
And then after that, I read that he collects photographs of sewer grates, and that's when it hit me. This politician is me.
They were quoting Mask of Anarchy towards the end of the campaign, but like Virgil said, rise like lions, you know, after a slumber. I mean, it's the kind of unabashed political romanticism that we basically have had beaten out of us
yep.
by 30 yep. years of just brutal instrumental politics. And to be unafraid to appeal to that kind of soaring emotional register, especially in the most cynical media world on earth, the most miserable shitheads in the world are the British media. I mean, they all are basically taking their head out of the oven every morning before they go out to work. And then they want everyone else to be as miserable as them. And in that environment of just rancid cynicism, to make that kind of appeal, it's genuine. And then to have it work! It's breathtaking, and it really does feel like the beginnings of the contours of something else, of like a light shaft, like a shaft of light coming through like a crack in a door.
What I want to talk about now is, like, and this episode is very much the sort of spiritual twin to our post-election episode in this country.
God, we needed a win.
Yeah, we needed mm-hmm. a win. Winning feels good. What I want to say is, like, that, okay, so this is, like I said, the twin to our U.S. post-election episode, which obviously had the terrible result. However, the thread that carries over in both of these episodes that now absolutely, let's to recenter the conversation on the United States, where we live and most of our fans live, the thread that carries over now even 1,000 times more true and strong
Bernie would have won.
He would have, because when you run a real left candidate, they win.
Yep.
Helen Olin had the best fucking line. She said, look, people are always going to vote for the real politician, and they will never vote for a fake leftist when there's a real right winger. The real right winger will win. Mm-hmm. But if there's a real left winger, the left winger will win. People smell bullshit.
I think this is instructive for, you know, the left after Bernie, though, because the big thing about Bernie's campaign, you know, despite what you read from the dead-ender 8%ers on Twitter who are like, you know, Bernie literally hung Hillary Clinton in an effigy during the primary. He was very demure for most of it.
Yeah.
He backed off on attacking her on her biggest weaknesses. With
when they went low, he went high.
Yeah. He was the only one who did that. And he was afraid to touch actual anti-imperialism. He did a few courageous things, like what he said about Gaza before the New York primary, but he wasn't full-throated. And I think the lesson for this, for Sanders is in the future that we may get, they're going to say whatever the fuck they want to say about you. You should just do it anyway. Jez, they said the same shit about Jez they said about Sanders, but he didn't stop. And yeah, we could talk about how the DNC rigged things and this and that and that, but you just have to fucking do it, and you have to beat them like Jez did in his own party elections, and you have to be unabashed in what you believe.
And he was quiet, and he waited. He fucking waited, but he never budged. Yeah. He just fucking sat there quietly. It built slowly. He's always been incredibly popular with his actual constituents, and then it just happened for no reason.
Yeah,
but John, for every reason.
John Ossoff, our beautiful centrist boy in Georgia, who's opposed to universal health care,
right,
and might very well win. All of the ads against him say he's like Nancy Pelosi's husband.
Yeah.
So you're just going to be slammed as a San Francisco gay-loving socialist anyway. It's worth remembering that in a vacuum, people hate Republicans in this fucking country because Republicans offer zero positive policies that will make an improvement in people's lives. Zero at all. Republicans did not win a majority in the presidential election. They didn't win a majority in the House vote in 2016. They lost the House vote in 2012. They stay on because there is no compelling alternative. Yeah. People hate Republicans and they don't like the Republican agenda, but people think Democrats are liars and weaklings and full of shit.
This This touches on an interesting point. I think I saw Richard Seymour make.
Shout out to Richard. He is he's got hair like General Zod from the 70s Superman, but he's a down ass bitch, and I consider him a comrade.
Yeah, he's cool. And he was saying that. Okay, so you look at the most successful lefty political figures of the past year or so, and you see quite old people like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn. But I think he made a really interesting point that maybe the reason that they're older, and of course we should all be hoping to, you know, put some younger, fresher blood into the mix for people that run. But the reason why maybe these older people resonate so much with the youngs is because they predate this neoliberal shitty turn.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
And they didn't make that deal. And people see that they sat that out. And maybe they looked at the time like impotent or they looked like cranks. But that old Nicholas Klein quote or whatever, first they laugh at you, then you win sort of thing. They sat that out. And young people went, well, you can call them goofy, but they didn't fucking destroy the world like all the other middle-aged Bay Justin Trudeau, Emmanuel Macron fuckers did as I was growing
up. And now, as long as we're taking a victory lap now, you know, winning feels good, but your enemy's losing also feels fucking great. And I want to talk now about the reaction. For the most part, the you know, vampire-like British media class is mostly eating shit.
Yeah.
Like, as we alluded to earlier, one of them's literally eating their book on television. However, in this country, quite the opposite is happening. And Felix alluded to the... you know, again, I think they're becoming less and less important of every day. They're realizing it, but they are lashing out, as you alluded to, the sort of 8% dead-end Hillary people who, when these elections came in, which is like as profound a refutation of their political worldview as you could get in the real world, are reacting to it as you would expect. And I want to go through now like a couple of the ways in which this stunning victory by Corbyn has been downplayed or explained away by the usual idiots in this country, beginning with the idea that the similar contingent to people who are convinced and think it's a compelling argument that Hillary actually won the election because she won the popular vote and therefore that has nothing to apologize for or change. The response is, well, Corbyn didn't actually win, you see.
Yeah. I call this the Matt Iglesias. This is what Maddie was sort of profiteering.
Okay, can I just like...
Break that down. Speak on it, fam.
There is no way that this coalition that May has put together is going to last
months. Correct.
It is fucking doomed.
If she can even put it together.
It is a minute is a bare majority held together with the connivance of a outright terrorist sympathizing party. These are the people who, after St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland, brought snakes back in so that they could handle them. As soon as Theresa May says, no, we're not going to send an SAS squad to raid the Vatican, are going to walk.
Yep.
And beyond that, the Sinn Féin has made a very compelling case that they're taking to court, apparently, that a DUP Tory coalition violates the Good Friday Agreement that led to Northern Ireland peace in the late 90s, because the whole premise of Good Friday is that the British government was going to be basically a nonpartisan observer and mediator to Northern Irish affairs. And having the most extreme unionist party as the reason that you're in power basically undercuts that entire premise. And there is actually a separate political crisis in Northern Ireland right now. They don't have a ministry in Northern Ireland right now. Everyone resigned because of a corruption scandal involving the DUP, and they have to have another election. And if they don't form a government out of that, then there's direct rule from Westminster. Basically, the troubles could start over again, as we said.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that this is a durable coalition is absurd. They're going to have another election very shortly. And as we've seen, the polls have moved significantly in Labour's direction since the election. All these people who said, I like what Corbyn stands for, but I can't imagine him being prime minister, because of how close he came, they can imagine it now.
They can imagine
they're okay with it.
And he silenced the Blairite voices in his own party.
This is like stage one of a two-stage process whereby the motherfucker is going to be in Downing Street, motherfucker.
Who, again, they did not want him to win. This leader of the Scottish Labour Party told people to vote tactically for the Conservatives to lock out the SNP.
Cowards.
And because of that, the Tories won a dozen seats in Scotland thanks to left vote splitting between the SNP, which is anti-austerity, and Democratic Socialists, and Labour, which is now anti-austerity and Democratic Socialists. If it hadn't been for that dozen seats, and when the left vote-splitting problem in Scotland is solved, Jez would be forming a government right now.
They call us the fucking spoilers.
Well, yeah. That's the other major thing that needs to be addressed here, is that in the reaction to a figure like Corbyn, among the centrist, pragmatic assholes in this country and across the Atlantic, the line that was played over and over again and is continually employed against, you know, like people who supported Bernie and still do now in this country, is this idea that, like, oh, your purity, you're too pure. You don't understand. Politics is about compromise, and it's about doing the best you can at the moment you can. Is utterly revealed how completely hollow that is when these people talk about compromise. They only mean compromise of the right. They do not mean compromise of their left.
Liberals have spent the last, what would you say, 40 years, if not more, fighting the left harder, so much harder than they ever fought the right. They're so inept at fighting the right that Donald Trump is fucking president.
Yep. I just, disingenuous argument number two that I want to address is a lot of fucking cum stains in this country said, well, if Labour had elected a competent, you know, like the lost Miliband brother, Nigel Miliband, you know, like some fucking Blairite, like Labour right fucking stooge.
Wallace and Gromit
looking dude. Yeah, exactly. That Labour would have won outright.
We're just throwing in everything we know about
England. The Milibands look
like
Wallace and Gromit.
Five things.
Utter and obvious refutation to that is that this election hinged dramatically on turning out the young and people who did not vote. And the idea that, like, Gordon Brown 2.0 would have had a better result than Corbyn is laughable. Okay, can we take a break and just... Let's take a break and we'll get back.
Okay.
Right, come on, folks, gather on. Grab your cheesy nachos and your fucking vuvuzelas. This is what we've all been waiting for. It's the Queen's fucking speech.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for coming here at such short notice. I will be reading a short prepared statement.
Come on, this is fucking history in the making, right? This is the ending of a chapter of a very thin book that nobody enjoyed reading.
It has become apparent to me that I no longer have the full support of my party.
You never had the support of the party, you big bag of fucking useless doubt.
It is for this reason, and with a heavy heart, that I have decided to stand down as leader.
Sam. Get me Fatty on the phone. Tell him he's won a hamper. He needs to know the line and toe the line. You, blind fucking robot droid. Clear that shit out of there. We need to get a draft in here to blow away the stench of fucking failure. Somebody get me a fucking Fanta.
All right, well, back to the reason that we're all here getting drunk. I just the last of the completely disingenuous reactions in this country that I want to talk about. It, like, you know, yay for Corbyn. I'm glad we're glad in quotation marks about the outcome. But you got to understand, it wasn't really about Corbyn. It was about Trump, and that, like, Theresa May held hands with Trump one time, and, like, this is all about the British people's disgusted reaction to the American president.
And look, there's no doubt that Trump he's not well liked in Britain. This whole cancellation of the visit, seeing how you know, unwelcome he would be.
You're not invited to our tea party.
But the idea that that's what won it for Labour, with all the evidence of the manifesto taking the
campaign off. It's also very U.S.-centric, this idea that, like, well, every politics exists only as a response to U.S. politics.
I mean, imagine making that argument the other way, saying that Hillary won the popular vote because Americans were happy to see her with King Salman. Like, what? That is why we donated to her.
As I mentioned, like, to their credit, the ghouls in the British press, they have to live with this now, so they are mostly eating shit. However, the benefit of having an ocean apart is that all of the fucking vampires that just will not die in this country face no such compunction whatsoever, and they are just terrified and even more doubling down on all of the bullshit that they did after the election and all of this Hillary shit. Like, which I said, like, now that they are faced with as clear a real-world refutation of their political and electoral strategy as you're likely to get. And I have to bring, again, as long as you're taking the victory lap, probably my favorite reaction on Twitter was Joan Walsh having an absolute meltdown.
Oh, Joanie.
Because somebody said Bernie would have won after the election. And, like we're saying, she literally freaked out for 2 days
because Bernie would have won.
Angry.
That's why she freaked out. Because Bernie would have won.
She turned into Nixon. At you will.
Yeah. Well, she replied
like,
to me.
I didn't have your advantages coming up, so you must be smarter than me. You won't have Joan Walsh to kick around anymore.
She also, in the midst of this, where of course she was like, "We need to nip this in the bud right now. This Bernie would have won shit is not going to fly." And it's like, guess what?
Too late, motherfucker.
Guess what? It's taken off the runway.
Flies.
Yep.
It flies.
Did you see when she replied to someone and said, "Actually, I'm doing fine. I think I could go work at one of my multiple jobs.
Yeah.
Gotta have them.
Gotta have them, brother.
What the? She turned into Jeb Bush.
What is she saying? She's like she's a single mom working 3 minimum wage jobs.
She wants to portray all the Bernie people as privileged, whatever, and her is still scraping out a living with a massive salary,
like myself.
Yes,
but
like you.
Like, you know, Bernie still would have won.
I've got a little cocker spaniel dog.
What I like the most are the center right ghouls who are falling apart, just breaking down
Jamie
over
Kerchick.
This. Like former Subway spokesman Jamie Kerchick. Or that one article in Politico headline, "Who's afraid of Jeremy Corbyn?" I am.
There was that guy Nick Cohen, who's one of the worst guys. And there's
a
Guardian
fucking Iraq war booster who should have been thrown in the Thames 10 years ago.
Ain't nothing wrong with him. He just looks like a turtle. but he had a headline, you know, because he knew he had to publish something at some point. And the headline is in the Guardian. He says, "I was wrong about Corbyn's chances, but I still don't like him." It's just like, okay, all right, that can be
honest.
An opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. The other really good take that I want to mention is Hotline Josh had something where it was like he was musing over, like, it's interesting to see, like, all these young people, you know, turning out for just like he sort of perplexed as to why the young is turning so left in the Western world. And it's like, if you are of that demographic cohort, the foundational moments that you've lived through, like as you were maturing into like becoming self-aware, like or politically aware, were 9/11, which everyone thinks redounded to Bush because he was a great hero, but people forget that was the worst national security disaster in U.S. history on his watch because of his fucking incompetence. After that, the Iraq War, the Pandora's box is the event of the 21st century, as far as I'm concerned, that has birthed a zillion maladies that we're all living through today, and the economic collapse. Gee, I wonder why all the 18 to 24-year-olds turned out...
Selfies! It's because of selfies!
Yeah, and compare it to... What do you think the formative experience of Hotline Josh's coming of age was? It was when Reagan and Tip O'Neill shook hands and were like, a priest walks into a bar and...
It was when David Hasselhoff did his concert at the Berlin Wall and then it fell like a week later.
Yeah, another reason is they really don't want to grow up to be like fucking Hotline Josh.
Yeah. Hotline Josh, who like cried when he saw the first California Raisins ad at 14.
And then I just want to say, like, the last thing in, you know, Meltdown May rolled over into Meltdown Joan. Ooh. And the last thing I want to say is that in her replies with someone saying Bernie would have won, one of her fans said, "Only in the dreams of white men," to somebody, and they replied, "Hi, Mexican American here, but thanks for playing the game anyway." And then came back and said, whoa, way to bring the race card into this. And then Joan hopped on to defend that fucking asshole. And what she said is like, racism, erasure in quotation marks, these are buzzwords of the irrelevant left. Well, remember her famous election day tweet where she was like at the polling station in Harlem, Bernie people outside in a wig holding a sign, inside most all black, Latino, and me.
Plus me.
But here's the point about Joan. She said the irrelevant left, referring to the actual left of the Democrat, the socialist, social democratic left, the irrelevant left who just pulled off a world historic election upset in the UK.
Not quite as relevant as the guest editor for The Nation in 2017.
We need to put this out here again. They didn't have to have this election. Theresa May called this election for the very specific reason that polls showed Labour as doomed and dead, and she thought she could get some undeniable 100-seat majority out of an early election. That's why they called it. And he came out of that fucking media-imposed and half of Labour Party-imposed hole and dug out of it. It is world historic is the word for it.
Well, she needed a strong majority and a mandate in order to negotiate Brexit and get Brexit passed through Parliament. Now she doesn't have that. She has a coalition that cannot fucking do that. They can't pass their sick austerity measures because the DUP doesn't even support austerity. They can't pass Brexit with this alliance or coalition minority government if they are actually able to make one. So we'll be going back to the polls in less than a year, probably by the fall.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing Theresa May can pass right now is a non-binding resolution honoring Gary Glitter.
And Jez says, Theresa May is squatting. I'm ready to form a government, or I'm ready for new elections. Bring it on. The conservatives, again, are as unpopular in that country as the Republicans are here. Every other party hates them or has been alienated by them. The regional independence parties, the SNP, Plaid Cymru, they are social democratic parties. They're not going to prop up a conservative government. The Lib Dems got fucked by being in a coalition with Cameron. They are not forming a government with them. It's not like Germany, where left parties have the most seats, but there's a grand coalition between conservatives and center leftists. So this government is... It's done. It's donezo.
Fuck, mate. It's bloody fuck, mate.
The new Speaker of Parliament is Milo Yiannopoulos' dad. My son, the first order of business, my son is a disgrace. We are passing a resolution declaring my son to be a nonce. We're getting rid of his type of racism with the frog, and we're bringing back anti-Polish racism. And I hate the bloody Iberians.
We will not support a government that... accepts Milo Yiannopoulos not because he likes to fuck children, but because he's Catholic.
He's a bit of a med.
To slightly recenter the conversation back in the only country that counts, America, the one that I live in.
Say it, motherfuckers!
We're going to say again, Bernie would have won. And now, going forward in this country, it needs to be hung around the neck of everyone in the Democrat, all the leadership of the Democratic Party. Anyone who still is caping for fucking Hillary Clinton and her supporters, or don't get that they are the fucking reason that we have Donald Trump as president, gotta go.
But her emails.
They gotta go.
Well, this mindset, we have a reading series about it, and I think, Will, you have to go to the bathroom, right?
Will has extreme diarrhea. Yeah.
I just found some really good hentai on my phone. I'm just gonna leave the room for a second.
All right, so
I just coincidentally am just gonna leave the room for a second. I have some business, some papers to file, and some business to attend to. But I'm sure I 100% endorse anything that gets said in my absence, and nothing will, for instance, cause me any personal strife with my family or anyone I know.
Okay,
bye.
All right, now that we got no Will here, I'm very happy. I finally get to do the show I've always wanted to do. So the truth about Syria.
No.
Amber is
Felix
going to.
Felix has been muted.
Amber is going to lead this, actually.
Okay. So I actually recently wrote a piece at the Baffler called All Worked Up and Nowhere to Go. And it's sort of a tale of two strikes. One that I thought was very effective and one that I thought didn't really accomplish what it wanted to accomplish. And I wrote it for two reasons. One, a lot of people are new to socialism now, and they know that it's more than being just to the left of the Democrats, but it's difficult to articulate an understanding of class. So I wanted to write about labor, because that is socialism.
Right.
We had a RL on recently, and lawyers are great about this, because they realize the limits of legalism. You really do need labor. You can't just, codify kind of liberation into law. Our current labor movement is pretty debased right now, but since labor is the political power of working people, we have to think of new ways of organizing in order to actually build power and liberate people. And the second reason I wrote it is because I wanted to talk about a successful and an unsuccessful strike. Because being on the left means you're going to fail sometimes, and I think we have to confront that. With every action, we want to go back and evaluate in concrete terms, how did this build power for the working class? And sometimes the answer is going to be it didn't. Mm. We're going to make mistakes. And even if you don't make any mistakes, even if you do everything right, you might still fail, because capitalism is big and powerful. And we're just going to lose more often than we win. And then it's just the breaks. But this stuff is really high stakes, so it's important to look at what we've done honestly, and without really being honest about what we're doing, we're going to get stomped. But I'm not going to actually go too much into the piece itself. You can read it. You can disagree with it. But I just wanted to say, I think with what we're building now, we can have an honest, an open movement that's receptive to criticism, that self-evaluates without perseverating on our failures or finger-pointing. We talk about a lot of the British media eating shit. You know what? I'm fine with that. Owen Jones, come to Jesus, ho. Great. That's awesome. Good. You were wrong. I think he's been very honest about that. That's great. We can be that. Or we can be Katha fucking Pollitt, who recently, and I don't mean in the past few weeks, I mean the day after Jezza's showing, ran a story that is now titled Lack of Empathy is Not the Problem. But before that, it was titled Liberal Elites Are Not the Problem. Mm. I wish she would have titled it Hillary Did Nothing Wrong. But, I'm not in the editorial pool at The Nation. So, Katha starts out, if I have to read one more article blaming liberal condescension toward the red states and the white working class for the election of Trump, I'm moving to Paris, France. She included France in case you didn't know where Paris was.
I'm moving to Paris, Texas, y'all. I'm getting six guns and a fucking Stetson hat.
That would be great. I would love to see the entire editorial board of The Nation totally foghorn leghorned out.
We're the rootinest, tootinest news in three counties.
Katha goes on to sort of criticize the mea culpas. These pieces started coming out even before the election and are still pouring down on our heads. Just within the last few weeks, the New Republic had Michael Tomasky's deploring, quote, elite liberal suspicion of middle America, unquote, for such red state practices as church going and gun owning. And the New York Times had Joan Williams accusing Democrats of impugning the, quote, social honor of working class whites by talking about them in demeaning and condescending ways, as exemplified by such phrases as flyover states, trailer trash, and plumber's butt.
Plumber's butt. That's one of the diseases Carl Digler has.
It's really serious and ableist to laugh at it.
Plumber's butt is my favorite Pornhub search.
She moves forward to say, but here's my question. Who is telling the Tea Partiers and Trump voters to empathize with the rest of us? Why is it all one way? Well, one, Katha, I think their lives are shittier than yours, but, you know, I digress. Also, again, there's this giant myth that there's this huge mass of white working class that voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Most poor people don't fucking vote.
Yes.
Trump didn't win. You lost. You fucking failed.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I was reading that article in the first half of it where she says, I'm sick of all of these articles where they're fetishizing these, you know, these noble, horny-handed sons of toil who feel abandoned by Washington and voted for Trump. I agree. That's like
not just my hands,
guys.
Buddy.
Trump was elected by dudes with, you know, in-ground pools who own Ski-Doo dealerships in the suburbs.
Yes.
We all know that. I agree with her on that. But then in the second half of it, she says, you know what? We're the Democrats are the party of everybody. And she lists all of these policies. It's like, wow, that sounds great. I didn't hear literally any of that from the fucking Hillary Clinton campaign. Who are you talking about?
Because it's wrong. The story isn't white working class, white low income voting for Trump. The story is white no college education voting for Trump. There's obviously a lot of overlap there, but it's not the same thing. It is the guys with above ground pools who do not have a college education, but they are old enough to have lived through the unprecedented prosperity of the post-war order so that they can make a high, decent income as a plumber or a factory worker or something like that. And they're confused why anyone would be mad about this arrangement.
It's Ford F-350 dealership owners. It's not actual poor people, very few of whom even vote for anyone.
No, they don't.
Right.
Vote.
I mean, I think the most instructive thing is that people, they'll bring up miners as an example of like a poor person's job.
I come from
like
miners. None of them have any jobs anymore,
right,
because they just started mining with dynamite.
Right. There are no miners left. Like, you might as well say chimney sweep. But they're so unfamiliar.
Although Jezza did pull 13% of the chimney sweep and the rest voted for Theresa May. It's shocking upset.
Jezza won all of Mary Poppins' friends. But because, right, the people, like Katha writing about this, she doesn't know anyone who didn't like go to Wellesley and go and have 7 unpaid internships for like a Braille library that they made for blind Habsburg children. So she thinks that anyone who didn't do this would be poor. She can't conceive of like, you know, a plumbing company owner who like does donuts in his own yard to spell out Blue Lives Matter. This is the type of like middle class authoritarian psycho that has always voted Republican. But because these people's first impulse is to defend their institutions that have failed, their first thought is like, well, it is, you know, it is kind of poor people's fault.
You have to face the Seven Sisters.
They think that elections are, and they are more like, as we talked about, they're more like this in the UK. They're like a battle of platforms. But in America, they are absolutely not. Like, people who want to harp on how liberal and progressive the Democratic Party platform that Hillary ran on was, totally ignore the fact that she's never talked about it.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with her campaign.
It's irrelevant.
Her campaign was entirely about tone and about how Trump was not fit to lead. It had nothing – it was no positive agenda at all. And – it's a spectacle, and they act like we're talking about position papers instead of spectacle. And the spectacle of Hillary Clinton was the spectacle of technocratic competence, which we know now is not moving to people.
There's maybe 10 people in the country who made up their mind on the last election by reading the 10,000-page committee-written party platforms from both of the parties, and they all work for Vox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, correct.
I mean, it was sort of a replay of what we saw with Obamacare. The people who said, oh, Hillary isn't running on anything. Well, if you go to if you use your PGP key to get into HillaryClinton.com/issues, you can play a Twine game where you play as Hillary Clinton figuring out how to drop earned income tax credits down a maze like Donkey Kong.
So, Mark Ellen's quest.
But any like normal do you know anyone who goes to the candidate website? I sure as hell fucking don't. It's almost like the reason that we have elections is because people don't go to candidate websites and look at these
things. Loser nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so Katha tries to wrap it up by denouncing the people that acknowledged their culpability in this. She says, sorry, self-abasing liberal pundits. If you go by actual deeds, liberals and leftists are the one with empathy. We want everyone to have health care. Kind of.
No, leftists do.
Yeah. For example,
liberals want to means test that shit.
For example, even those Tea Partiers who in the debate over the Affordable Care Act loudly asserted that people who can't afford treatment should just die. We want everyone to be decently paid for their labor. Debatable. No matter how low they wear their pants.
Oh.
What?
Are you kidding me?
No one sags anymore, you fuck.
What? 1992?
No matter if they wear Kangol hats or not.
Somehow the party that claims to be the voice of working people has no problem with paying them so little they're eligible for food stamps.
Is that the Democratic Party or the Republican Party? I have no idea what she's talking about.
Let's talk about fucking welfare reform. Yeah. Who did that?
Yeah, I assume she means the Republicans, but I have no idea.
Or is it Vox.com where they don't pay their lowest staff writers a living wage?
So she ends in true nation, the USA's oldest quote-unquote left publication by saying, what should matter in politics is what the government does. Everything else is just flattery, like George H.W. Bush's off-sided love of pork rinds.
Yeah, that famously cited love of pork.
Unfortunately, flattery gets you everywhere. I agree with her. What matters is what the government does. And the fucking Clinton dynasty didn't do shit for poor people, and they remember it. Yep. And we are not going to be fooled again. So, in the words of Comrade DeVito, Katha Pollitt, retire.
is this our famous host and co-host?
Oh, hey, Will, how you doing?
I'm back from the business store.
Hey, okay. Will.
I did some good business at the business store. I just had the thought that, like, you know, my signature show feature remains, you know, unalloyed and completely.
No one would ever encroach upon your turf.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely not have an awkward dinner on the Upper West Side anytime soon.
Yeah, but guys, to close
things out. God bless a class trade.
to close out our show today, because man, this party has it's gone on.
Yeah.
But I'd like to close out today because I
drank an entire bottle of wine, by the way.
Oh my god, I drank we had two bottles of $12 champagne, and I think I've drank 70% of most of them.
Yeah, I drank 100% of a white wine bottle right now.
Champ, Midwestern champ.
Hell yeah, motherfuckers.
I want to put one last tack in something. The episode we did right on the day that Trump was inaugurated, I thought it was a great episode, but it was also kind of gloomy. We didn't get the reality we wanted. But there was a silver lining. It was that about a week before, Chelsea Manning had her sentence commuted. And at the end of that episode, I said that we can't give up hope because Chelsea Manning never did. And I guess I'm more optimistic than a lot of people, probably due to concussions, but I thought there would be some silver lining coming along, but I didn't think it would be for years. But we saw it. We saw what happens when people take charge of their own future and organize and do whatever the fuck they are supposed to do. And we can create a future like that for ourselves here. It's never too late. The fight isn't over. We haven't won. We haven't lost. No one has.
I think a closing thought would be, if you are of a center-left party in America or the UK or any, you know, or in this country, let's say,
come to Jesus.
If you are, and your aesthetic continues to be means testing, austerity, war overseas, a continued ass-kissing of our national security state, military, and police organizations.
If you want to come to us, open arms. Open arms. Everyone wants to acknowledge they make mistakes. That's how we move forward. But if you cannot acknowledge that the fucking Democratic Party and the libs didn't fail so hard during this fucking election, you're not just a loser. You're a fucking liability. So get out of our way.
I will never again vote for any candidate who does not collect photographs of sewer grates, manhole covers, has never edited the Wikipedia page for diesel trade. Never again.
Cheers, lads. Lads!
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 Lads.
Woo! Bloody mental.
Cheers, guys. Cheers to the absolute
Cheers,
lads.
Lads.
Boy.
Lads.
To all of you.
Boy.
Lads forever.
Bloody mental! It's bloody legend, mate.
From the haunts of daily life, where is wage the daily strife? Common wants and common cares cuts the human heart with tears. Lies like lions after us lumbering. In greatly unknowable numbers.